Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 210. Yes, this is Caffeination 210. We're having a great weekend here at the Caffeination Lair, here at the Caffeination Podcast, as the case may be. Hopefully you're all having a good weekend, and beginning of the week continues that feeling wherever you may start consuming this episode. You are, of course, listening to the Caffeination Podcast, located lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. Oddly enough, the Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. It's a social podcasting network site, kind of like MySpace for podcasts, so you can head on over there, check out all the other shows that I listen to, and hopefully expand your horizons a little bit. Beyond this show, hopefully you might have found my show through the same thing. It's kind of a little give and take with all the different stuff that's over there. And last but most certainly not least, this show is a Puzzle Piece production. You can head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com to find out more about what that means exactly. So this is an interesting new thing we're trying here. This is the 210th Caffeination. We're calling this the Svelte Edition, not only because I like the word, it has a nice little fun sound to it and looks even cool, but also because we're trying to trim down here. We're trying to trim the fat on the Caffeination Podcast. We've been recently creeping up over 50 minutes, and I realize just not a lot of people out there have a lot of time to listen to podcasts. A lot of you have a commute that you're trying to keep things down to. So I've been asking out there, and most of the people say that, 40 minutes they can almost fit in. 30 to 35, 30 being the operative term there, is probably the sweet spot. Now, I know I have a tendency to go on and on, so we're going to try and keep it nice and brief. We're going to try and bring it back on down to a little bit more manageable levels here. I mean, hey, I can talk 4 hours. I'm not proud or tired, as Arlo Guthrie once said, but it's just that, I need to really realize and kind of reel myself in here, so that's what we're trying to do here, and hopefully you're going to enjoy the process. Because it means we're going to put a little bit less of stories actually out there, but we're going to have a lot of really good content. It's all the same stuff you would have heard before here at the Caffeination Podcast. We're going to still be hitting all the best in caffeine culture and technology news, but at the same point in time, you're only going to be seeing the best of the best. This is kind of like the celebrity deathmatch. This is the cage fight of news stories to actually make it on the air here. We started with something like, maybe 25 stories that I was originally going to talk about, and then we're down to the fighting, maybe 15? All right, but, there's some winners, some losers, and some of the ones that really didn't make it on the show are probably going to end up being blog posts, because we're going to start start posting on the blog a little bit more often here, so that you can come back and actually read some fun stuff over at the podcast's homepage as well. We had been doing that for a little while, just kind of got away from it. This has been a great past week here at the Caffeination. Actually, in my personal life as well, I got to actually give a lecture at Temple on our presentation/lecture to the Instructional Technologies User Group, or the ITUG people. So if you're listening to this show and that's where you found me, then hey, thanks for stopping by and checking this out. So I got to give a lecture entitled Finding Podcasts to Enhance Course Content. So I've been kind of going over the audio of that, and I'm going to be posting everything, posting links rather, so you can actually head on over there and check it out. You'll see all the different slides and everything that I used. I'm just trying to edit the content down a little bit, because I realize even in the lecture I had a tendency to go on a little bit. So we're trying to bring it back down here, and this kind of stuff really isn't helping. I'm just babbling on here. All right, on today's show, you're going to hear about any and all of the following: restraint, which we're having a little bit of an issue with right now; presentations already done; cables; big oil; data portability; cake. Everybody loves cake, and compost. But before we get on into that, just wanted to talk to you a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. This show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. Try it free for 45 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast for more information. If you're looking for a better way to present or collaborate during your conference calls, your solution is simple: web conferencing with GoToMeeting. During your call, everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com, and your computer screen shows up on all of their monitors. It's like you're all in the same room. GoToMeeting is perfect for sales or product demos, training, or real-time collaboration. Plus, you're not charged a permanent fee like some of the other providers that are out there. You can meet as often as you want for as long as you need with one flat rate. With GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime without ever having to step foot outside your office. You not only end up saving a serious amount of time, but a heck of a lot of money as well. See for yourself. Try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. And if you'd like to find out more about all the other stuff that we're into, please head on over to the homepage. You can check out. We have the GoDaddy promo codes up there. That's Pod84 and Blue84, just in case you were in the market for stuff. But, on right down into the news, right down into the meat and the potatoes and whatever else we got going on here. First up, we have the section Real News Bites. It's where we talk a little bit about the more serious stuff that's out right now. And definitely, a little bit more heady topics get shoved into this category. But we like to think that they're all still geek-related, you know. First thing is, actually, we have to apologize, not because it's anything we really did wrong, but a story that I handpicked for the last show on the Gravity Lamp, the winner of the Green Design Prize, I believe that's what it's actually called, the Greener Gadgets Prize. The man made a small mistake. See, the idea behind the lamp was that you're supposed to pull a 50-pound weight up 5 feet, and then drop it. And as the weight dropped, the kinetic energy included in the system would give you enough energy to power a 700-lumen LED for 4 hours. Great idea in theory. However, when somebody actually posted it to Slashdot, a bunch of the math geeks over there actually got their calculators out, whipped out the slide rule, did the whole 9 yards, and found out that there was a couple problems. First of all, they actually did post the plans for it up there. So they said, all right, here's a little breakdown of it. It says, okay, there's a 50 pounds of weight that you need to pull up 4 feet. And it says, so that's 200 foot-pounds. So, 50 pounds times 4, which comes out to say, let's just say, 0.075 watt-hours. Over 4 hours, that means 0.019 watts of continuous power being generated by this system. So to get the 700 lumens of light at a 200 lumen watt requires 3.5 watts an hour. If I've lost you right now, I'm sorry. There's a lot of numbers flying around. Basically, the long and the short of it is, if this lamp was supposed to do what it was told to have been able to do, the weight, instead of 50 pounds, would have to have been 925 pounds. Now, it would be one thing if this was just another little internet backbiting kind of champion thing here. If where somebody's going around saying, this is wrong, that's incorrect. But apparently, they actually checked out a whole bunch of other stuff. So not only did the system originally bet on it being 100% efficient, which nothing which exists in the real world is ever 100% efficient. Just ask Apple or Dell or anybody when it comes to the battery lifetimes, or even your EPA estimated miles per gallon on your car when you buy it. But so not only that, but there was a decimal place in the wrong point. So the man who actually won the honor actually kind of admitted that it was his mistake. Actually, not kind of at all. He admitted that it was his mistake and offered the prize to the runners up below him, which, makes him very... It really kind of goes to prove that the person really wasn't out just for the notoriety or anything like that. He was out to actually, make sure that the right person actually got the award, which is awesome. So we have to apologize for reporting that story. But at the same point in time, it's really cool. It's really interesting to see the power of the internet and exactly how many different things can change just from the drop of the hat. Somebody posts it up over at Slashdot, and all of a sudden everybody scrambles around, pulls out their slide rules, and proves some things wrong. So it's kind of fun to sit there and play around with that idea. Now, the next little thing we have up here is, your DNA can be used against you. Modern medicine has gone wrong. Yes, that's correct. There's a lot of privacy fears that are currently surrounding DNA testing. Basically, if your insurance policy pays for the DNA testing that is done on you, then supposedly they should have the access to the records and the analysis on what your DNA shows about you. So if you're genetically predisposed to becoming overweight, if you're genetically predisposed to getting prostate cancer, if you have like a recessive gene for cystic fibrosis, there's a whole bunch of different things that can be seen genetically. In fact, there's a massive, massive amount of things that can be seen. So what people are doing to kind of skirt around this entire issue is they're paying for their own out of their pocket so that they can still get the effect and they can actually reap the benefits. Because these things, you know, how would you like to be able to know that even though, you know, your father may have died in a car accident or something like that, that he had like, you know, he passed down a gene for massive heart problems. How would you like to know ahead of time that you were very, very, very likely to get diabetes? These are really, you know, powerful pieces of information to put in your personal arsenal. And people are scared that, you know, the insurance company, and rightly so, I mean, it's all about the buck in the world. So people are scared that the insurance companies are actually going to come out there and say, hey, you know what, you're a little bit more of a risk than this guy over here. So your premium, instead of being, let's just say, $300 every 2 weeks, that's going to be $450. It's a very real and very tangible problem that's eventually going to come down the pike. So at the same point in time, you know, that there's a couple bills that are actually in, I think there's one in the Senate right now, and unfortunately they're all stalled because, I mean, it's great to have an idea of that kind of thing out there where, you know, basically saying that you cannot, it would ban genetic discrimination by insurers and employers. So if the employee is genetically predisposed to any number of conditions, you know, that the employer cannot, you know, base their hiring practices off of that, which makes very much sense. The same thing with insurance, you know, equal insurance coverage for all people. So it's like if you work at you know, company X, Y, or Z, you should be able to choose as if they didn't know what was going to happen. They should be able to proactively treat and trend towards things that will make these things either not happen or hopefully plan better in case that they actually do. And that's how it should operate. But instead, you know, they're saying, yeah, you know what, we kind of work on the basis of if you don't get sick, we make money. If you do get sick, we want to fix you up as cheaply as possible, get you right back out the door so you can start paying us that money again. So I think I have more than made up in my past medical problems. I have more than made up for any of the amount of money that my parents might have spent in any one of those given years. A couple hospital stays, broken bones, five or six different surgeries on my hands and knees. So, I mean, there's all kinds of fun stuff in my background. I know the insurance company have a massive file on me somewhere. But, hey, as long as they can't discriminate me based on my previous history, that's all that really matters. And I don't think they can. They can't just say, yeah, you know, kind of like your credit score. Yeah, I'm really sorry, but you're not qualified for health insurance because you broke your leg in a car accident. Yeah, that would, the idea behind that just sucks, and it's really, really just around the corner unless somebody stands up. So unfortunately, the way that the government operates with lobbyists and everything, it's going to be a while before we can see that. So the best argument against it, the best thing to do to fight against this kind of thing is knowledge. So that's what we're doing here, and we'd appreciate you spread this kind of information, you share links, you send people over to the podcast or the links that we show you, and hopefully, you know, we can be able to spread the general consciousness about these much more heady topics. Then the last little thing we have in the Real News Bites section is actually the Geek Defense, as this thing's being called. This is kind of a frustrating little case. Apparently, there's a man by the name of Hans Reiser, and he is being tried for murder of his wife. And his entire defense is based off of the fact that all this evidence that the people have gathered against him, if you'd want to read more about it, you can head on over there. This isn't the case that I specifically came to show you about, because, I mean, based on the way that journalism works, based on the way that anybody actually writes an article, it can influence you one way or another. And I'm not about to pass judgment on the man, even though it does appear that he is not on the right side of this argument. The idea behind his defense is that he is such a geek. He is so, let me just say, it says being too intelligent can be a sort of a curse. Here it is. Here's the phrase that I love. As a computer programmer, he is so immersed in the folds of his own intellect that he had no idea how complicit he was making himself appear. I love, first of all, the term immersed in the folds of his own intellect. And the sad thing is, the smarter you are, and just to kind of put it in perspective, this guy got accepted into college at 14. So he's not exactly a slouch in the IQ department here. And, you know, despite what everything else, he wrote his own file system, he has written his own version of D&D, a competing version. I mean, that's kind of crazy cool stuff. Despite the fact that he may or may not have actually killed someone. But when you really look at it, they're trying to say that just because he's introverted and just because he's a social misfit that made him do things which appear to have, you know, which appear to have made him much more of a suspect than he would have been if he was much more of a socially adjustable person. And I'd really like to hear some people's comments on this. I mean, I not on this case specifically, but whether or not, like, you know, the Uber geeks that you know, do they have problems relating to people? I mean, I knew some incredibly tragically brilliant people that I went to high school with. I went to a magnet high school here in Philadelphia, which a public school, which basically means you had to either pass certain tests, have certain grades to get into. They kind of like to pull all the people together who are interested in certain different things or interested in a higher standard of education. So I have been at points in time classified as one of the smart kids, but I was nowhere near the smartest of the smart in this school. And there were some people that I went to school with and some people I was very good friends with who were tragically brilliant. That's the only way you can put it. And I think it's because of the knowledge of these people that I have. It's because of the memory of these people. I mean, nobody passed away to my knowledge yet, but it's the social troubles and the social ills that some of the people that I've seen have just because they are so smart that they really don't take the time to actually network, to actually extend themselves into the social sphere of the world. So, I mean, I could almost see this being a very valid defense that it's... unfortunately, the root of any good argument is that it has to have plausibility. So yes, it is plausible that this is the case. Is it possible that this is the case? You know, there is no body, there is no stuff, you know, going back to the actual case at hand. Just curious if anybody else out there had this kind of experience with people in their lives, or if you are one of those people where you just, I mean, I'm not, you know, the complete social butterfly, you know, I have lots of friends, I have a lot of friends and everything like that, but there are certain instances where, you know, you've just been at the computer too long, you've just been completely disassociated from anybody and everything, you know, even email or something, you're working on a big coding project, you walk out into the hallway and somebody says something which should normally come off as a joke, and you just kind of blankly stare at them and they think you're a bit of a butthead. And it's just, you know, it's that kind of stuff where just expand upon that. Imagine if instead of working on a programming project, your mind was wrapped around this brilliant idea that was just coming to the surface, and you need to see every tiny little intricacy of it in order to make it reality, to bring it to flesh. And then, you know, the niceties of social networking, the niceties of you know, actually being able to interact in a social space somehow escape you. I mean, you could seem to be much less of a likable person. So I just wanted to kind of put it out there and, you know, say I understand what they're trying to go for, but I really hope they're not sullying the name of geeks everywhere, because if he did it, it's just going to be bad for everybody. You know what I mean? All right, that about wraps up the Real News Bites section. We have a fun little amount of stuff in the Tech Cruft section. First one up here is the Frailty of Ideas. This is a fun little article, or not article, artifact from the past. How would you like to see where the World Wide Web was born? Yes, that's right, the next cube that Tim Berners-Lee used during his time at CERN to actually create and host the first web page. Now, the internet, unfortunately, the article... unfortunately says, attention cleaning staff, please do not turn off the internet. That is false. This was not the internet, this was the web. Slightly different, very close at this point in time exactly on what they are. But this is, you know, using the World Wide Web, the hypertext markup language. This is, you know, the experience, quote-unquote, online as you know it now, existed starting at this machine. So there was a point in time 17 years ago when somebody could have walked by. Let's just say Tim was in another building about to demo his fantastic web page to another coworker. When, you know, let's just say the janitor, the cleaning lady was looking for a little extra socket or something like that, unplugged it. Maybe that one tiny little change would have snowballed everything out of control, and, you know, what we have here, podcasting, would never have existed. Just kind of a crazy thing to think of, and kind of cool at the same point in time. You know, next machines are pretty interesting. If you've never seen one, you should head on over there. Just massive black boxes. All right, and then kind of in the same way, a little bit of a connectivity from that to the complete opposite end of the spectrum. If you'd like to see the general idea of the undersea cable capacity, where all the different cables are going from and to in the world. I mean, we recently had five cut in the area of the Mediterranean, isolating different ports of call for the internet. You know, different places on the network went dark. So if you'd like to see exactly how the network plays out on a continental scale, this is a really cool different little graphic from over at mopo.ca. So I really kind of suggest that you head on over there and give this a nice strong look into, see exactly what you see. The majority of the connections are from North America to Europe. And specifically, it seems to be from North America to a point on the British Isles, which is kind of fun to think of. You know, wonder why they didn't go to Portugal or Spain or anything like that. And then, you know, that there's a couple longer cables that actually end up heading out to, you know, from the Japanese area, from that area of the ocean. I can't remember the proper term for that collective area, kind of like this. Philadelphia's in the Delaware Valley, the larger area without meaning the continent, you know. But from that over to the western coast of the U.S., and then there's even a couple stringing down to Hawaii, which is kind of fun to see. Then a couple stringing out to Australia and whatnot, so it's a really neat little graphic that I highly suggest you head out there. And then kind of going a little bit in a different direction, I'm wondering if anybody out there is actually an angry gamer. Are you one of those people who likes to throw controllers, pitch and moan? I know I've known a couple of them in my life, and I have at some points in life have gotten to that one tiny little bit where you say, you know what, enough is enough, and you just wing something, you throw something, you act out. And, you know, as a younger adolescent male, I was known to act out on different occasions. Well, apparently a couple of the guys over at let's see if I get this name, Insult Sword Fighting. Yeah, that's InfultSwordFighting.blogspot.com have actually decided to do the acting out for you. And if you're in the market for a new video game system, be it PS3, Xbox 360, or Wii, and you're of the type of the ilk who like to throw your controllers about with reckless abandon, you might want to know how the controller would actually stand up to that. So the article's listed over at Kotaku, and they have a link to all the different ones. Basically, Xbox 360... the controller pad won over the other two. PlayStation, after a minor amount of abuse, the controller was unusable. The only thing that you could actually use was the six-axis control. Basically, you know, when you tilt the thing, the controller would still let it tilt. However, none of the buttons worked, and that's kind of intrinsic to the value. And the Wii actually held up pretty well. I mean, assuming that you didn't throw it through the TV, they were kind of unsure how to take the idea of a wrist strap into it. Is it an intrinsic part of the controller? You know, should they test with, without it, you know, based on what that is? So kind of interesting. So the Wii and the Xbox 360 seem to have passed. So if you are a violent individual, you might want to steer clear of the PS3 just for a little bit until they fix that whole thing. All right, next up we have a fun little bit of a pop culture trivia for you. The Space Invaders video game is about to turn 30 years old some point in time this year. I think sometime in the middle of June they're actually doing it. So, in honor of that, they're actually releasing full-size Space Invaders towels. That's correct. You too can have the fun little thing going across the back and forth and shooting the aliens as they come down ever so slowly. So 120 centimeters long. So it's one of the big bath towels there. kind of cool. It's really the arcade graphics, and there's even a fun little hand towel off to the side. So it's neat to see that in that kind of idea. But apparently the larger ones are going to be retailing for $19.90 a pop. I think it would actually be fun if instead of 1990, if they had actually made it the 78? Yeah, I think it would be fun if they had done it 1978, just to honor the year that that Space Invaders actually came out, because it would seem to be a little bit more, it'd be a fun little product selling time. You pay the year that it was released, so 1978, as opposed to 1990. Nothing really happened in the Space Invaders world in 1990, so moving right along. Let's see what we have here. The tallest structure in the world. This is TechCraft at its finest. This is the stuff you don't expect to see. Now, you might think that it's that infamous skyscraper that's being built currently in Dubai as the Burj Dubai. No. It's actually an oil rig. Go figure. But this is the tallest freestanding structure in the world. What it is it works kind of an opposite of an actual skyscraper, in which the portions of the skyscraper are actually to hold the building aloft and, you know, keep it structurally stable. Whereas this, the building is freestanding in the opposite direction, in which the cables extending to the sea floor are actually there to keep the building, to pull it down, which is kind of cool. And the staggering thing is that this entire structure, the sole purpose of this is to suck a non-renewable resource out of the ocean. After it's done, they're possibly just going to abandon it. It's just going to sit there. It's called the Ursa Tension Leg Platform, which would be a cool name for a micronation, which happens to a lot of these little mid-sea things after their usefulness has passed. But the astounding fact that they released was actually that this thing is twice as tall as the tallest skyscraper now. That is insane. Twice as tall. And it's just designed to suck oil right out of the bottom of the ocean. And it's pretty impressive. And, you know, it's actually habitable. So it has four primary tethers. And, you know, it's a massive, massive structure. I mean, the huge oil tankers that you see flying about, they actually managed to go under it, you know, under the little overpass that they have there. So it'd be kind of cool to take a step back. You're looking at this thing, the top of it alone looks massive. And then to imagine that it extends beyond your wildest dreams down into the depths is really cool as well. All right, up to the last little section here at the TechCruft section here, rather, is to help the community out, the open source community as a whole. There's a new project out there called the Data Portability Project, and apparently Red Hat has sued them because the logo that they were using for the data portability brand name, rather, was too close, or in the words of Red Hat, identical to the logo of Fedora. Now, I can't remember off the top of my head what the Fedora logo looked like, so it's a legally arguable claim. So they've been suggested to actually, instead of, you know, arguing this in court and keeping their rather nice logo, what they should do is rather hold a logo contest. So that's what they're doing right now. So you can head on over. There's an article at TechCrunch, and there's also an article over at chrissad.wordpress.com. So you basically just check the links over at caffeination.com, and you can find out all the stuff. Now, they're interesting enough, so it needs to be distinct, remain clear and identifiable, even at small sizes, so 16 by 16 pixels, and it's open until March 11th. You have to convey the idea, the concept of moving and owning and synchronizing data, aesthetically fit into the broad range of site application and designs, and provide a clear silhouette that can be rendered in multiple colors. So there's a couple different things. Here's the fun parts about it. The iPhone. There's an iPhone up as one of the current prizes that's being donated. There's a week's worth of ad space on TechCrunch. That is invaluable. There's a month of ad space at Center Networks and HTML Center. There's $100 from Bubblicious. There's $100 from Compete Credits. There's $500 and an I'd Sync That t-shirt from Plaxo. There's an AO Trend Map from Information Architects, and you remember that what we talked about there. And then there's $100 from Hedgehog Lab. And then the second and third prizes will receive an AO Trend Map from Information Architects. So I just thought that was kind of awesome, and you need to head on over there to check that out. If you are a graphic designer, you might want to give it a shot to see exactly how you might be able to enter this contest. I know I'm going to be working on it in my spare time, see if I can actually craft one, because, just the idea to be able to submit to the contest and hopefully expand the horizons of that skill set. The idea that you need to be able to take your information from one place to the other without having it locked into the different closed systems is pretty cool. So I'd like to help that community out. You can head on over there and submit a logo, see what happens. All right, that brings us to a close the TechCruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast. And let's see, we have a couple little bits in the caffeine and food, not too much, and I believe we're even running relatively on time here. Imagine that. Haven't stopped, so we're just going to keep right on going here. Caffeine and food. First up, we have a little bit of retro action, kind of a la the Space Invaders from up above us, but we actually have retro food. Yes, the Atari cake. This is a complete Atari cake made out of mascarpone. I think it's made out of mascarpone and fondant, but it has two controllers, edible, I believe, and then it has a little homage to Pac-Man across the bottom corner. So there's the Pac-Man symbol, then the two ghosts and a bunch of dots. No power pellet, you know, the big one, to say the least. But the Atari console itself looks dead on accurate. It's insane. So it's gorgeous, and it's delicious looking at the same point in time. So this is, you know, they're saying, hey, how about what do you think for your next birthday? You know what? I'd go for this. I'd like to see if I could have a Commodore 64 made, since that was my first real experience with a home computer. That'd be awesome. Have a little Commodore 64. Maybe the disk drive's just made out of cake or something like that. I don't even know. But kind of cool, kind of tasty, so I thought I'd put it into this little section. Up next, this is all over the internet right now. This is a robot making coffee, and not just coffee, but bad coffee. There's an Italian robot out there that you know, looks kind of weird. Looks like a cross between a Spaceballs character with a giant white helmet and a bunch of cans of Red Bull all put together. But it only makes instant coffee at this point in time. But the amount of dexterity inherent in all this different little things, it makes it really kind of interesting and kind of cool at the same point in time. So I just wanted to kind of pass this along, and hopefully you might find it interesting. I first of all, it has robots, so robots immediately get you into the show, and it has a robot making coffee, which also damn well gets you on the show. The only thing I have to add here to this little segment is that once robots control coffee, much like the factors of production in communism, we are doomed here. That once they control the access to coffee, there is no way I can function as a human being, let alone a podcaster, to continue to do this. So beware. Don't support your local podcast. Support your local barista, all right? All right, and then the last thing that we have here in the... Last thing we have here in the caffeine and food section, I think we're running just about on schedule here, is actually a fun little gadget from over at ogizmo.com. After you're done eating all the cake, after you're done with all your coffee grounds and everything else like that, what do you do? Well, personally, I save my coffee grounds for other things, like using them as a, you know, a fertilizer in the garden and stuff like that. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that we've talked about previously on how you can use a reuse the coffee grounds, but in the realm of kind of being a better citizen and a better person who's living on this planet, how would you like to check out the Nature Mill Pro Indoor Composter? Yes, this is around the size and shape of a garbage can, and what it does is, over the course of a month, you can put 120 pounds of food waste in this thing, total. And it creates a bin of compost, or bin of soil, that appears out the bottom. So this is a closed system. Insane and awesome. They show it in a kitchen. It probably wouldn't be in a kitchen, because they said there's a slight musty odor, a slight mushroom-type odor associated with it. You know what? And this is probably only when the thing gets opened up. I would take care of this. I mean, yes, it's incredibly... incredibly expensive, but at the, you know, it's around $399. But hey, this is less than an iPhone if you really think about it, and it's really an interesting idea. It's a really a good way to actually, you know, take your impact on the planet and reduce it significantly. And I had to stick it into the food section just because all the stuff that we talk about, all the different consumables and everything else that we mention here at the Caffeination, it'd be just really cool to see this kind of thing become the next dishwasher, become the next I don't even know. Name a couple of kitchen appliances that you find under your counter. I mean, yeah, this needs to sit next to your recycle bin. This needs to sit next to your current trash can. I mean, so after you've separated out the recycles and you have your trash as it is, and then after you've separated out the food waste and put that in here, you know, that's just awesome. So I think it says every 2 weeks there's a fresh supply of compost that actually pops out the bottom. So even if you just spread it over your backyard, even if you just put it in the flower garden, or even if you just take it off into the woods and dump the good soil into the middle of nowhere, I mean, it's still better than throwing it out, because it's already ready to be used again. You know what I mean? So I just, you know, big props to the people over at the Nature Mill Company there. It's just insane and awesome at the same point in time. Well, that about wraps up the Caffeination podcast. Believe it or not, we came in at roughly 33, 34 minutes, so there's nothing really else to do, but thank you for listening to us here at the Caffeination podcast. Wait, what the heck was that? Weird little music there popped up in the background. That was actually the Mario Castle remix on my fun little thing over here. This is more along the lines of what we usually end the show with. There we go. This has been the Caffeination podcast. Hopefully we are your source for caffeine culture and technology news. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also proudly listed over at blueberry.com. That's B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. That's Blueberry without the E's. And last but most certainly not least, we are a Puzzle Piece production. If you'd like to find out more about what that means, please head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. So if you'd like this show, if you'd like to drop us a line, please feel free to email me at caffeination@gmail.com. Comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to do. You can call our listener line and leave a fun little voice mail over at 215-240-1319, or you can Skype me at The Caffeination, all one word. You like to sign up to our newsletter? Last thing I'm going to put out there for today's show, if you'd like to sign up to our newsletter, please just click the register button over at the Caffeination homepage and sign up, and you will start receiving the show notes as soon as they're posted online, if that's the kind of thing you're into. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for listening here to the Caffeination 210, 210, the Svelte edition, and we are coming in tiny compared to the last couple shows. Thanks for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.